Okay.
So uplifting, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, don't forget it's being recorded, so.
Don't say bad things about other people.
Can be used against you in court.
We've blundered over that line several times this week.
Emphasis on blundered, yes.
I'm interested to see your status quo image for one of the fields. So it's actually one where there's, I don't know if you know, 2152 and 699 source.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really interesting, odd circular polarization feature there, which I don't quite fully understand. I'm wondering if it's just my imaging or.
Which field is it?
Did you have them by number or did you have them by name?
Number.
Number. I think it's field.
Sorry, two. Spaced out there.
I think it's field two.
Field two?
Let me just check.
You're just talking now.
What's happening?
Should we use in radians?
I had to redo my scripts and re-download all the data, so I'm not sure if it's just something that, because I didn't regenerate my eye images.
Yeah.
I only generated V. But,
There's all sorts of that.
This thing was a bit unusual. It could be just the way things are mosaiced. And it's taking a mix of features from the different beams.
Those are some nice plots, Greg.
Yep. I was gonna make that into a little video, but I couldn't be bothered.
Like rotating, you mean?
Yeah.
Alright. So, field two, you think? So which Stokes are you after, Emil? I'll cut all four here.
Just V for now.
Okay.
Oh, actually, that's interesting.
Oh. I is yours, actually. I didn't create I. I copied it from your directory.
Just reminding me of what actually the leakage from QU, because this source may well be polarized at this point.
Some gnarliness in Q and U.
Mm.
And V. This is the V mosaic that I've got for field two. This is bright.
So the big bright
troublemaker.
Troublemaker is 2152 minus 69. That's a really bright source.
Oh no.
Is there a supernova remnant in that? In Stokes V.
Are you saying like...
There's a circle there.
It's a circular.
Yeah.
What is that?
That's strange.
It's only in Stokes V. Well, that's a nature paper right there.
They just come so easily, don't they?
They never have before. Yeah, seriously, there's something wrong there.
Is that like the size of a beam?
Yeah, probably. It's weird, isn't it? Why is it coming on here?
Well, might as well publish.
I guess so. There's nothing for it. Sorry, what did you say the first source was? The target of interest. The one that you're interested in.
Yep, sorry, let me just adjust my... Do not adjust your toes.
You do, however, self-calibrate. Right. So V is gone haywire.
You realize the problem.
Stokes V is gone. Thank you. You know that.
Oh, look at that. There's some kind of echoey thing going on there. if only I could have turned off integer zoom. Yeah, I'm presuming that it doesn't actually have friends like this.
Well, that one's real.
Which one? This one?
The one on the left is real. All
right, not this one.
The big guy is... No.
That's a ghost.
I suspect that's a ghost. Is that your video? Or?
Yeah.
Oh.
What?
Oh, well, that's my view.
Yeah, don't know what to say. Like 70 millijansky.
Wow. Okay, so you're not seeing what I'm seeing. So I'm seeing a point, which now that I think about it, is possibly some sort of a, could be polarized, linearly polarized hotspot or something where things are happening and it's probably leaking some component of it into V. And it is reasonably bright. Well, I'm surprised it would be too intense.
That's your Stokes I talk.
Yeah, so that's Stokes I. That's my Stokes V. That was just sums coming there. See what the source looked like. Oops.
The Stokes I I've got here look the same. Particularly as. Oh, no, it does. I guess it does.
It'll just be a scaling, I assume.
Yeah.
But that's.
It should be the same image, actually.
Yeah. I set the limits to something different to what the default was. Just because that is a bright source.
Wow.
Oh, we're going to you.
That's Q. This is U.
Just trying to see if it corresponds to that peak.
Well, it's U. This is probably actually minus Q or something on the sky. But it's U. So it's U in the classical definition.
It's wonderful in here. It falls anyway. Is it different weighting?
No, I think I tried to do it largely the same as what I saw in your logs or whatever, or scripts maybe. Let me see what I actually used. Have a cable.
Check what I actually
used. Briggs minus 0.5.
Oh. Maybe I changed.
Yep. I did not do any tapering or baseline selection.
Oh, minus 0.5.
I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, so this is kind of what I meant, where I don't really see much in the way of leakage. It could be that it's a different weighting.
Yeah,
something that seems to be clearly different.
Yeah. So which beam?
Do you cut out the short baselines?
No.
Right, that could be the difference.
So you cut out the short baseline?
Yeah, I have a 200 lambda cut off. Just because we're mainly interested in the point source properties.
Sure. That's in the image plane, I guess. In the imaging step that you do that cut, right? You don't actually remove them from the measurement set or anything.
No. Right. So it's just a UV range. I mean, ideally, I guess it should be a taper.
What's that?
Ideally, it should be a taper. I've just got this hard cut.
Well, not many things do an inner taper, do they?
George, do you have the individual fields? So not you've done the beams.
Mm-hmm.
I've done the mosaic. Do you have the fields like the footprints? The footprints.
Mm-hmm.
Have you run a gene on them? But you can. Yeah, I might do that.
Okay, so they're in not work but scratch.
Okay. One more. Scratch. In your data set, Rex.
Yep.
A141.
Yep. Yeah, so there
is it just ones. Field blah dot fits.
Yes, this like field 27 B fits. Those are the ones.
Yep. Good. Right, I'll write the script.
Except I think scratch is full, so I think you actually have to work somewhere else, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
The catalogs shouldn't be that big, right?
No, I don't think so. No, no, but that volume is, directory is stuffed. Like you can't even create a file.
Yeah, I'll get a gene to spit it out to my home directory or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I saw the ACES meeting before. He's made some progress with the Ribble.
Well, that's good.
Bandpass.
Aaron has me. Awesome.
Yeah. He said he has difficulty making the early morning and evening session just because of school drop off and pick up. But he'll try to come in early at some stage. A few days to give an update.
Great. Okay. That's excellent.
Another one.
God. Extremely annoying experience. Somehow I have like 400 different passwords for Slack.
It creates like a new, like every single workspace is considered a different account.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Except on mobile sometimes.
It's my pet peeves.
Seem to be completely incompetent. Managing LastPass together with Slack is unbearable. By the way, guys, I thought we could, you know, do like an introduction round one, like at 2 o'clock when we start. So not ignoring you right now, just sort of thinking that we can do that at 2 o'clock. That's right. Yeah. So you're going to be able to come tomorrow?
I'll be in tomorrow.
Okay. Mosaic headers, you have to specify for each.
Yep. So if it's the 10 arc second or something.
Yeah, I think I gave it. But it doesn't matter, right? So the integrated flux will just be rubbish no matter what you do.
Yeah.
So I think I just gave it like 12 arc seconds or something.
Yeah, sure.
And then just use the fluxes.
Yep.
An SRPH about using a 1-bit analog to digital conversion for a radio interferometer. Not a 1-bit, 1-bit correlator, it's a 1-bit digital signal path. It's impossible, isn't it?
It's a sign bit. Yeah. I think that's what they used to do.
No, it's a correlator was 1-bit.
I don't know, in terms of the signal, because that was the easiest way to encode a signal.
Oh.
Whether it's a bit positive or a bit negative. Just, oh, what do they call it? To my old engineering days.
Hmm. So why is this? What's new about this? I mean,
fine.
just the sign of the analog sensor levels that's stored or retained.
Used for voice communication in 1937. Maybe they didn't look at the citations far enough back.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a whole lot of quite grim looking mathematics here, actually. Reference from the 60s.
Better get rolling.
Hey, sure.
Hi, how's it going?
Yes.
Good. Yeah, sure.
Hey, soon.
Sorry about the last few days of drama.
No, it's not. Well, it's probably my fault.
No, it's not. It was just all.
Oh, it's all good.
Yeah. It's all good now,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, I talked with David this morning. All good.
Okay. I think this is going to be really productive.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you should get involved.
Yeah,
in definitely. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
That's a funny little one.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's like 3C31. But thank you. I'm surrounded by two eyeballs.
Cool.
It's like that John Lennon picture that
they have. Oh, yeah.
Are you the kind of person that thinks that your burnt cheese on toast looks like Jesus?
Does that look like Jesus?
No, but the last one you posted on Facebook kind of looked like one of those cheese on toast. I think.
It was Jesus.
Cheese on toast.
Baby Jesus.
Yeah.
Baby Jesus.
It's kind of cool though. It's like Mr. Squiggle goes into space. If anyone in this room knows what Mr. Squiggle is anymore.
Hey, I remember that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Did they reruns or something?
No.
Or was it
original?
Oh.
No, no. I mean, it hasn't. I haven't seen it in years, but I remember watching it as a kid.
Because they had the special release coin recently.
Oh.
And my son was asking me, what's Mr. Squiggle?
Oh, no.
It's like, what? Arrived.
Yeah, I miss Mr. Squiggle. That was great.
Mr. Squiggle.
I need to look this thing up.
Good to see he's come to making ASCAP images.
I wonder if it's a processing jet or something.
Well, it looks like 3C31. So if you look up 3C31, you'll see that it's pretty much the same.
Oxford.
I am going to get the UBS.
All right.
To get to the airport. Which is a shame, because I would have liked to have sat in on this discussion.
Well, it'll be recorded. In fact, it's already recording. So,
yeah. Your own exit has been recorded.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So, someone's going to listen to this and go, what? What's going on?
Yeah. Yes. But how am I supposed to put my 2 cents worth in? Right. And that. And confirm. Mm-hmm.
Cool. I'll also pack up. Beeps and boops.
Kicking off on your phone.
Uber is 3 minutes away.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Greg. And see you online tomorrow.
You surely will.
I'll be there. Probably stressing about my park's observations.
All right.
Come on, there we are.
Ah, that's a nice little saddle. Very good. All right. Thanks again, too, Alex. So are you going to join remotely tomorrow? Or?
I'll try to. My day's going to be... I don't know what my day's going to be like tomorrow.
Yeah,
but yeah, sure. If I can, I will.
All right.
Great. Hey guys, great to see you all.
Nice to see you briefly. Have a good trip back.
Yes.
Ooh. Sorry, Craig.
No. We might move down the other end of the table.
See you later.
See ya.
See ya, Alec. You can leave those cups over there.
Oh, cool.
Thank you. Table. That's right. Yeah. All right. Well, we might as well get started too, I guess.
Yeah.
That's all right with you guys. And I think, well, hopefully, Jimmy and Tim will show up at some point before too long. But, well, like I said, maybe it's good to start with like a quick round table to introduce.
Yep.
It's only me, maybe, that you don't know. But anyway. Should we go around anyway? Why don't you start?
Yeah.
Sure. So I'm Andrew. I work on Blastars. And yeah. I mean, how long are we going for?
That's probably fine, especially in your case, since you know everybody. I'm George Heald. I'm one of the PIs of the Possum project. Work mostly on linear polarization, but I'm also one of Andrew's co-supervisors, and so I'm getting more involved in circular polarization as well.
I'm Neville Lentz. I work on all sorts of stuff, mostly ASCAP commissionings, but I dabble in all sorts of polarization and transients.
Including large surveys of circular polarization.
Yes.
MWA.
That's relevant.
Yeah.
Everything.
Did I get back just in time for introductions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. Lucky me. I'm Matthew. I'm a PhD student at ANU. I like pushing machine learning onto large area radio surveys and hoping it works with a bit more nuance.
Yeah, I'm Mark. I'm a commencing PhD student at UCID, and I'll be working on gamma ray bursts and stuff with ASCAP.
Great.
Yep. Postdoc here working on pulsars, just joined VAS like yesterday.
My name is Emma. I'm an undergrad from the University of Maryland over in the United States, and I'm here for the next few months working with Tara on ASCAP things.
Yeah, and I'm Tara. I'm one of the PIs of VAS looking at radio transients with ASCAP.
Cool.
Okay.
Good. All right. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to moderate the discussion or anything like that, but we did come up with a couple of topics.
Yeah.
So
I guess the aim of this meeting was really for George and I and other people who are interested to discuss this sort of Stokes v circular polarization surveys, because they kind of fall between the gaps of the main focus of Possum and the main focus of VAST, but they're interesting to both groups. And I guess the purpose of this was for us to discuss this, and everyone else can either join in, or you might just be here to watch, you know, some of the students, they're just here to kind of listen, but other people will have their views on what we need to do to get some good science out of the data sets we're planning is the main their main purpose.
Indeed.
So do you want to start discussing that, or should
I can
keep talking if you want?
Yeah, no, I mean, so I can start by just sort of mentioning a few things about Possum, I guess.
Yeah.
So Possum has always been intended to be sort of the counterpart to EMU, which is Total Intensity All Sky Continuum Survey. Possum is also All Sky, but in polarization, and it's been exclusively focused to date on linear polarization, but that's not because we weren't interested in circular polarization per se, it's more because we didn't have anybody in the team that was willing to put time into doing it and, you know, verifying it and establishing what the criteria would be for getting useful science products out of Stokes V maps. We have always had it on our list that we would be happy to add circular polarization to Possum in the case that, you know, people came along and were willing to spend time to make it happen, basically. And I think that might be where we're at now. I think maybe it's worth mentioning that, you know, it's not as if Possum, you know, would feel like it owned anything, right, exclusively. I mean, all ASCAP products are supposed to be for everyone. Right?
And they're all meant to go into the archive as soon as they're ready. So, exactly. Yeah. But I think having some specific scientific interests helps you guide what we do with the products, right? Like, exactly. And what products we need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe the last thing to mention about Possum is that, you know, in the South, well, as I said, the main aim is a linear polarization survey, and the state of the art at the moment for linear polarization is still NBSS in the North, which is pretty limited in many ways, and Possum will, you know, go way beyond, especially in the Southern Hemisphere, where NBSS doesn't cover most of the Southern Sky, or a large fraction of the Southern Sky, really. Mm. But the RAC survey that's going on now will already take us well beyond NBSS in the polarization context. And so for Possum, you know, we're kind of juggling at the minute our priorities because we know that we'll get a lot out of RACs, and we could spend a whole heck of a lot of time on it, but that'll be at the expense of doing full Possum. So we have to hit this balance between, you know, how to get the low-hanging fruit out of RACs, get a lot of benefit there, but without, you know, expending all our effort there and forgetting about the main survey.
One of the things about circular polarization on that front is, as not a polarization expert, but having just worked over the last few years. So, okay, I'll just start about VAST first and then talk about that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, to give the same kind of context as George for VAST, we're studying all kinds of objects that are variable or transient, but some small subset of those classes of objects, like flare stars, pulsars, and potentially exoplanetary systems, have a really high fraction of circular polarization. So over the last 5 years, since the original VAST science case was developed, mainly with Emil, and then previous postdocs like Christine Lynch, we started with the MWA data looking at circular polarization as a way of finding the same objects we were looking for in variability. So, you know, particularly because we don't always have great time sampling, you know, you could find a flare star in circular polarization rather than originally in by variability. So that's how we come into the same kind of like different angle on, you know, the same thing. But what I was going to say with RACs and circular polarization, is it true that it seems somewhat easier to get reasonable circular polarization products than linear polarization in terms of if we're looking at, like, we're basically, most of the time, you seem to get a field that's almost empty of everything. And then for what we're interested in anyway, you're looking at like individual point sources that are quite different to everything else in the field, which is pretty much empty.
Right.
It seems a lot easier to deal with as a non-polarization expert than all your linear polarization data products.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I think that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in part because the processing is way easier. No.
Right.
Right, you just make a single broadband map and that's it.
So in some ways, when you're talking about how much effort to expend on RACs, because I think, you know, I have the same question, the thing about circular polarization compared to the full Possum idea is that maybe it's not actually that much extra effort in RACs.
Like, just for the Stokes V part.
Just for the Stokes V part. It's a matter of make sure they turn on the Stokes V, yes. you know, flag in ASCAP Soft and yeah. produce those images.
Yes.
And then it's not, and then obviously you have to check the calibration and check leakage and stuff, but it's not a hugely different to doing normal imaging, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And you don't have to decompile.
Actually, yeah, exactly. Right? I was just going to say it's a lot easier because you don't even have to decompile. You just create dirty maps.
Right.
Yeah.
I was just going to say as an example, like that whole data set that you've been working on, I just sort of reprocessed over lunch, basically. So I've got mosaics of, you know, 40 fields or so in Stokes V, just because it's so easy to do.
From racks, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It seems like a no-brainer to do a racks Stokes V survey.
Yes.
For all of us that are interested, right?
And I think we should do it even for linear polarization because it gives you some idea of leakage and how well the instrument is performing. Because if there's something, you know, really wrong with the calibration, you'll easily see it in Stokes V. You'll start to see artifacts.
So can I ask, so how bad the leakage can be? So let's say you have a very strong continuum source, and what's the sort of force alarm sort of rate or whatever in the Stokes V?
Right. So it's at the moment after mosaic. It tends to be sort of a few tenths of a percent of Stokes I leaking into Stokes V.
It depends a lot on where in the footprint you're looking. So on the edges of the field, it can get reasonably high. I think it was over 40%.
A few percent,
But within the central part of the field, typically a few tenths of a percent.
Which is actually, for many of the purposes that Possum would be interested in Stokes V for, actually that's not really good enough. Because, you know, some radio galaxies show circular polarization as well.
Yeah.
And that tends to be down around the 0.1% level or so
right.
at most. And so we actually would like to get the systematics way down compared to where it is now.
Yeah, for that you'd absolutely need.
Whereas I think for other aspects of science, like I think just making the images, you're going to just look through and find a very small number of like flare stars or whatever just straight away.
Yeah.
And then we can decide what further analysis to do, but I think it won't be that dependent on perfecting those, like, leakage.
Close stars and pulsars usually
straight up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a good example of that was yesterday, 2 days ago, like, I was looking at the leakage in the test 2 super mosaic of racks, and straight away, like, this 25% polarized pulsar just pops out. Like, it's very, very easy. To see those types of
things. I mean, there's also going to be not many of them.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
We know that from the first looking we've done, and I know it's not completely comparable at low frequency, but like the MWA stuff, you do an entire survey and you get like
handful of sources.
10 things, but those 10 things could be interesting.
And you'd like to think then that could be a little bit higher with this.
Yes, well. It should be.
I think so.
It's more sensitive and have far less data problems. And
Right, exactly. Yeah, there should be a lot less of the sky, which is problematic.
It almost sounds like, RACS is happening right now. And the thing that I can't quite remember, even though it was discussed in Slack, is exactly why Julie hasn't turned on the Stokes V flag. There was some reason with ASCAP Soft that she said it was making the processing way slower. We asked her about it, right?
I thought that was the cubes.
Yeah, I think
that's that was for the cubes.
It's problematic.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason why Stokes V should be.
And I think when I sent her my wish list, I think it even said don't deconvolve Stokes V.
Yeah.
All right.
Don't even bother.
Yeah.
In fact,
it should be. You
know. I mean, personally, I'd say just do IQ U and V and continuum anyway. Really won't add that much overhead. Because
That was sort of what we asked for.
And the quick look Q and U stuff is fine. You know, I mean, cubes obviously you want later on for RMs and so on.
Absolutely.
But quick look at MFS is fine.
Personally, I don't know why you're not doing that.
I'm sure we specifically asked. Just the imaging part would be 4 separate commands. I'm trying to get CASA to work as it's easy. Stokes, it's in here. I'm trying to find that thread.
Just mean CASA is easy.
Not as easy as in CASA because ASCAP Soft currently only calibrates I and does not appear to save the polarization UV data. So when I image in CASA, there's no data to make the images. It will be four times longer regardless of which imaging procedure one uses.
What?
I didn't understand the response. I remember talking to Andrew or somebody about how I didn't understand what that meant. And Aidan then said, we'll make the polarization image option available to the next patch to ASCAP Soft. Better to focus on Stokes Eye only until then. So it sounded like something in ASCAP Soft. But that was like 3 weeks ago, so I don't know whether they've done that patch yet.
Don't understand what it means to say polarization visibilities aren't stored.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Can you repeat that wording? What was that?
Because they're all...
Yeah, it's ASCAP currently only calibrates eye and does not appear to save the polarization UV data.
Maybe it just means that the X, Y, and Y, X aren't calibrated or something.
Yeah.
But even that seems hard to believe, actually. Because
yeah.
I'll tag you in that.
That's not how it works, actually.
I'll tag you, George, in that discussion so you can go and look at it.
Oh, yeah, okay. Is it in the...
In the RAX channel.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, done. So assuming we can image the RAX data in each polarization, just to get a continuum like image in those things, it seems like that's something we could start working on right away, right? Yeah. Like,
in fact, we sort of have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
you've just been doing it.
Yeah, Emil just did it. So.
Yeah. George has done it as well, so it's, yeah. It's, I mean, it's not really not that hard to do.
No. Even I can do it.
Even George can do it.
So I suppose in terms of going ahead, like in terms of collaboration, is this all we need to do to say let's do this? Can we get involved with this too?
Yeah, maybe. Of course, yes.
You've got data. If we've got data, we can start.
Yeah. So I think
looking at things.
Yeah. So I think the main thing for us now. I mean, we've done quite a lot this week about characterizing the leakage. And so maybe we can look at that usefully now. I mean, in brief.
Yeah.
It seems to me that the things to do are to figure out how we're going to characterize the systematics, figure out which ones we need to improve, who's going to do the work, and how we're going to do the cataloging, basically.
Yeah. Do you have a sense from what you've just done how many objects you are talking about? Like if you've just processed 40 fields?
Oh, I haven't looked at all of them. I've only sort of just scanned a few random ones. I haven't seen anything out of the ordinary yet, but I think it was the same ones that Andrew looked at as well. I've just been reprocessing just to check whether WS Clean does it differently to CASA. And I think you only found one.
Yeah, there was one pulsar in that massive.
So we have the problem that RAX is not that deep.
It's not that deep, that's right.
Yeah.
It could also be just that this was pointing in an area of sky, which is perhaps
not so.
Not that
you would expect most polarized things to be in the plane.
Is that true? I thought flare stars were so close
enough
that they're everywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
Pulsars, I guess.
Pulsars would be in the plane. Flare stars may not be flaring. But
millisecond pulsars can...
millisecond pulsars can be off the plane as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know at low frequencies, you tend to find them preferentially out of the plane.
But I guess that's because of the scattering and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, and...
Well, about that, for the periodic search, well, continuum should be the same.
And I think so. This was that region that we looked at was between what galactic latitudes of 30 and 50 or something like that, minus 30, minus 50 or something.
Yeah, you did that on the projection.
It was on DS9.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it was.
So it's just some random area in the halo, basically. I think.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not the best place to be finding these candidates. Maybe we can, from the ones that are available now that Julie's working on, we could pick a region that's in the plane to focus on next or something.
UV SETI and Proxima SEN, would we have detected them in RAX?
Yeah.
Proxima SEN, absolutely.
Yeah. And UV SETI.
That would have been booming.
It was getting up to hundreds of millijanskis. Like 50 to 100 millijanskis. So should have been, And the flare timescale was around 10 minutes, so you would have, if you caught it during a flare, it would be probably one of the brightest things in the field.
Yeah. So, but of course, again, the problem is most of the time it's not flaring.
About 25.
Wax is only short.
Duty cycle is about, I think, 25% for flare stars at around gigahertz.
25%? That's not too bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're already anticipating doing multiple passes anyway.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
I was just thinking about how much scientific, in you know what I mean? You were saying how worth it is it?
Yeah.
I think it's good. It's definitely worth doing. It's definitely a good like test run for what's coming up, but it's not going to be comparable to searching emu or, you know, data or whatever in terms of, you know, the amount of,
It's at least an order of magnitude more. More sensitivity than, approximately an order of magnitude.
But the good thing is with several passes, you know, with the duty cycle of these flares being around 20% or so, like you might, you know, 5, 6, 7 passes, you might catch something somewhere from time to time.
But I don't think Rax is going to do that. If Rax does 5 or 6 or 7 passes, it becomes bigger than the Mars Pilot Survey.
True.
It doesn't by a long way.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Fair enough. I mean, how many tests have we done now, though?
It wouldn't surprise me.
Are we up to test 4?
Oh, it's Tim.
Hey, Simone. Good to see you.
All right. Hey. I didn't get any messages from the front
Craig
desk.
Left and Tim appears. Yeah.
Yeah. We just wandered in.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if I did that many, whether it be, put it intentional or not.
Yeah.
I mean, because they'll do several passes just because they're improving how they do the survey, but also in terms of looking for changes and just putting the telescope through its paces every so often. It's a great regression test.
Capabilities. But I was assuming that some of those things wouldn't require them to generate a full massive RAX data set every time of the whole sky. But hey, it's great if they do. I would not be complaining.
The thing is, the data itself is tiny. Observed data.
But you collect.
From that point of view, it's.
Yeah, that's true. But the amount of effort in. I mean, now, you know, how it's like with the MWA, collecting the data is way easier than actually doing anything with the data. So you'd be collecting these epochs of racks, and who would be processing them?
If it's there for legacy purposes, being able to say, oh, something happened, what was there 6 months ago, you know, you can just grab that data set, image that part of the sky. Whether that happens or not, I don't know.
I think there'll be a lot of pressure soon to start the pilot surveys, right? We're all kind of waiting and we're getting really ready, like, to start observing, you know. So
then I get the impression basically everybody's ready to go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Aidan basically, when I asked him the other day, so when do we actually, like, when can we start the pilot surveys? It was like once that new machine is set up at PAWSI or something, like in a month.
Like end of next year or something.
Oh, no, maybe
no,
a new disc.
No, basically a new disc for the ingest.
New disc. Sorry, I overexcited you. In about a month or something. He said any time after that, if you feel like you're ready to start, you can start.
Right. And they say normally 100 hours, but if you find that, whoops, we weren't actually ready, you can start over, I think, isn't that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But if we do
no
that 4 times, do we get 4 epochs of the month?
Yeah. Quite perfect. We need to go again.
This is being recorded, George, you said.
Oh, yeah.
Can you wipe that bit?
Yeah. Sure enough.
The bit where George told me how I could get a better transient service.
I would never advise you to be unethical, but
you're a CSIRO employee.
That's true.
Let's keep it in mind.
Oh yeah.
It's like an official notice. Yeah.
That's really funny.
You were a CSIRO.
Yeah, that's right. Not anymore. I've just received that pink slip in the mail. Yes.
As for the vast possum tied together.
Yeah.
I was wondering what the possum strategy is. Observing strategy. Are you like I'm not familiar. So are you going lots of deep stares, Yep. Copying possum. Sorry, copying emu.
It's the same data.
Okay.
Same data.
Same data.
Yep. So we'll just use the same visibilities recorded for emu.
Okay.
For possum as well. One thing that I'd like to do now is, now that emu is going for the lower frequency bands and not commensal with wallaby anymore, for us it's great to have the continuum data from both emu and wallaby. So I think, you know, when it comes time to, you know, because now all the surveys are going to be asked sometime this year, I guess, to sort of re-encapsulate the science aims and so on.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be this time last year, but whatever. When we get to that point, I mean, you know, I think we can A, add circular polarization to the list, B, we can add diffuse polarization to the list, because there's people interested in both of those topics within the team and outside the possum team as well. And third, I think we can say, you know, we'd like to make use of continuum data both from the emu-focused observations and the wallaby-focused observations and use them together.
So does that mean for the pilot, you guys are going to use your 100 hours just to do a higher frequency, the same fields as emu?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So whatever, so the emu field that they're targeting is the SPT field. I think it's the SPT field. They'll cover it from 800 to 1100 megahertz or whatever it is, and we'll observe the same fields at the sort of wallaby frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
That's good though. I mean, the 12 hour, each emu stair is 12, the integration is 12 hours, right? That's fantastic product for flare stars, as we've seen.
Right, because then you have a much better hit rate, I guess, right?
Yeah.
You can already check what's in their pilot region then, right? Mm. If you know what you're doing.
Yeah, we know.
So, yeah, you can check if there's flare stars of interest in their region.
Mm-hmm.
The Busy Week agenda, the emu overview yesterday, there's a link to the PDF file that Josh Marble presented, and that has the region
marked. All right.
So it's good.
You can just see it exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So Tim, we've been basically talking about, you know, circular polarization from the point of view of the, you know, transient searches and so on. But I'm really unclear. I spoke very briefly with Jimmy last week about this. I'm really unclear whether there's any sort of applicability for, you know, the kind of observations that we're doing for your kind of work as well.
Yeah, I think so. You could almost certainly end up looking for absorption Zeeman splitting towards continuum sources. So a lot of that's been done by Miller-Goss at the VLA. And there's going to be a lot of interest in seeing if there's any magnetic fields in the damp Lyman alpha absorbers that are observed with FAST, for sure.
What kind of spectral resolution do you need for that?
So it fully depends on the line width of the absorption feature. You're going to need about 6 channels across the full width. So presumably you guys do that well. I mean, you don't just get 1 channel per absorption feature. I don't know.
By default, most of these will be observed with fairly coarse channels.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, for this particular possum. Yeah, yeah, yeah. For possum, there's not much that you'd be able to do. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So you'd need a
not for circular Zeeman stuff. No.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah, I think that was kind of my concern was whether that would be feasible at all because I mean our default way of working is to use megahertz channels, which is way too broad for anything Zeeman related.
Correct.
But, you know, maybe there's, you know, at an earlier point in the data processing stream, higher resolution data can be plucked out. Even then, it's, what, 30 kilohertz or something, isn't it, channels?
Depending on the zoom item, you can go to pretty crazy resolution, of the order of kilohertz or maybe even sub-kilohertz.
Mm-hmm. Well, but now again, I'm thinking of the possum observation.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yep, yep.
So I think that's sort of 30 kilohertz channels or something. So.
80.
What's that?
18 kilohertz.
18.
If you were to use the...
whatever it is corresponds to 4 kilometers per second at H1, doesn't it? Something like that.
do that much. But it's,
that's
it's
from memory.
54 times higher resolution than 1 megahertz.
Okay, good.
I think it's 80 kilohertz. Mm. It's basically the default one. That's what Wallaby uses. Things you could do it the other way around, where if there is a high spectral resolution observation, you can still do polarimetry with that by averaging over the channels.
Yeah.
You don't have as much bandwidth, but
Sure.
You can still use it.
No, but I was just wondering if there's, you know, if there's
in the standard,
a prospect for expanding POSSUM in that direction.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like
in the standard default parameters for POSSUM, there's no. So unless there's some way to piggyback a zoom mode that you guys don't care about for a field where you might know there's something already of interest, the Regal Crutcher cloud, nobody's mapped the field there, but it's pretty clearly there, so ASCAP should do that.
Yeah, I think the original intention was that you could have both done at the same time, so you could have the continuum average and also the high spectral resolution, but...
Yep.
The ingest just
too much.
Yep. It's just too much data coming in.
Yep. Understood.
Okay, so then I think in the POSSUM in the direct POSSUM context, it really is just the, you know, the relationship to fast and transient searching that makes most sense, and you know we can more indirectly have some kind of connection with the sort of spectral line application as well. That's a little bit more indirect, I think. Mm-hmm.
So in VAS, we don't actually have yet. Any policies covering this pilot period about projects and stuff, but we're rapidly developing them.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys got that in place? Like, what's your approach to within POSSUM,
mm-hmm.
the projects and sharing during the pilot period, not in the period of the distant future where everything's public in CASDA and whatever, but like for the next year?
Yeah, we don't really have something explicitly written down like that.
Yeah.
We just have general policies, which... They're basically the MWA policies rebadged as POSSUM policies. So you have to propose and have accepted either a project proposal or a student proposal, depending on who you are, and then a paper proposal for any publications.
Yeah.
And I think that's generic enough that it doesn't have to be. You know, it's not specifically said that this only applies to proper POSSUM data.
Yeah.
Collaboration policy. So.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
So the expectation would be that we would be defining projects and paper proposals already now in this period.
Yeah. So we should. We need to just polish off ours and actually put them up and start doing that.
Yeah.
But it does bring me to the issue that you raised the other day in the RACS meeting, which I fully agree with. There's currently a bit of ambiguity, right, about in RACS, what do we do right now? Like, is this all we need to do? If we want to look for flare stars right now, do we just go, okay, I'm going to do it? So
I guess so.
I've told the people here that we're going to do it, so let's just look.
I mean, I guess so. I really have to say, you know, I'll cover up the slider of my shirt.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, we're really, you know, charging down a dark hallway right now. I mean, you know, ASCAP is because, you know, there's an incredible amount of science resource that's becoming available now, and there's, like, no shepherding or management of the science community at all.
My current concern for RACS, my current concern for RACS is a big version of what just happened in the last few days about the little pulsar thing, which we won't go into.
Yeah.
If we start right now, like, sure, to do a full, for you to write like an all sky polarized circular polarization survey paper, that's a huge amount of work. But literally, the very next thing you find could be something worth publishing tomorrow. Like in RACS, we don't need the whole survey. We don't need your 1% leakage sorted out. We see something unexpected and bright, and you want to publish it right now.
Mm-hmm.
We just do it.
I guess
there's nothing covering this, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think the answer that you'll get is they say, well, this will all be, you know, popped into CASDA anyway. But of course, that first of all is irrelevant because of the timeline.
Yeah.
The actual in practice timeline.
Yeah.
And second of all, it doesn't actually, you know, absolve us of the responsibility to take care of our own scientists, right?
That's what I'm kind of thinking right now.
Yeah.
Right. So Well, maybe at the moment we should just informally fill that void by saying, I've got a student who'd like to look at this and tell everyone in the RACS channel, and then we said it.
I guess so, even though the RACS channel doesn't reach very many people at all.
No.
But maybe we should just start making use of the SSTPI mailing list, which does exist, I think, even though we never see it used.
True.
And just send out emails and say, you know, look, we, Vast and Possum have just talked about doing this collaborative project. We're going to do it.
Yeah.
FYI, basically. So anybody that sees any concern or...
Yeah. I mean, I think there's the balance between doing that and not... I know when Dave and others started the RACS project, part of our aim, both the CSIRO people and the external people, was for that to truly be a lean, like, focus on the data quality, you know, and not turn it into, like, a giant kind of complicated thing where scientists are making demands of it. Because the idea was get a lean team who will actually help do the data analysis and then get it into CASDA and then let the rest of the science happen because it's in CASDA.
Yeah.
So I guess proactively advertising it to a wider group of people might actually create the problem they were trying to avoid.
Maybe. But I think it's
with 10 people mailing back going, how do I get the RACS data? Do you know what I mean? And then having to say, well, the point is it will be in CASDA, but at the moment it's still being tested.
Mm-hmm.
But in the process of testing it, you're going to find stuff that's interesting right now.
It's naive to think that that's not going to happen.
No. But it should be a privilege of the people who are involved in testing it that they do get to do something with the results, right, if they find them before it gets to the CASDA stage.
Yeah. Okay, maybe we should be clear that we are kind of conflating two things here, right?
Yep.
Because, you know, this is all relevant in the RACS context, but also in the full survey context.
True.
Next year, or whatever it is.
Yep.
Right? And I guess in part, correct, what I'm saying is that all PIs should be, you know, at least vaguely aware that there are these, you know, agreements between various science projects to do things together.
Yep. So yes, we should send something out about circular polarization.
Yeah.
I think that is a good point. Yes.
And then there's the RACS part, which is you know, related, very closely related but different, I think.
Yep.
Yes. For me personally, I really think it's something that 18F is going to have to do is acknowledge that there is some science that will be done with RACS and that some of that will begin before it gets into CASDA, and that there has to be some management of that.
Yes. I guess you're the right person to raise that with them internally, but I'm happy to support that. So to talk about some specific projects then we could do with RACS that could result in science before you have even finished all the extra quality control. I mean, I invited Shug to come to this meeting so that he could talk about, like, is this interesting for looking for pulsars? That's something you could do, like, right now as you process the fields, right? Is there any reason why we shouldn't do that right now?
Not that I can see.
Yeah. So likewise, Andrew could do something on, you know, flare stars, and I've kind of got, you know, Mark a little bit interested in that as well. Like, could we do that? Could we, you know, now?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm right. Should we? Should we?
Let's do it.
Let's do it then, I guess. Yeah. Right.
But yeah. So I mean, this is the kind of thing. It's like, you know, we're not forbidden from doing science with the RACS data.
No,
not that I'm aware of.
No, we're totally not. There's just no. So the best way to create a policy about it is for us to do a little project and send it round to the RACS team and say, hey, what should we do? We found some, you know, pulsars.
Yeah, we found something here.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Just send it to Dave and say, this has happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably the best thing to do is to write the Nature draft.
Tickets to Stockholm.
I think, you know, if we ever get any, you know, sort of pushback, like, well, this was not the aim of the RACS data, you know, it's clear that in the process of assessing leakage as a systematic, you're also doing the search for real objects. Mm. So, you know, there's real...
looking for allies.
Yeah. Well, either what will happen is you will either find something new and interesting as you produce Stokes V images, or you won't find anything particularly exciting and interesting, and at the end of it, you'll have a huge survey that you can then write up as a Stokes V rack survey. Do you know what I mean? And it will have 10 known pulsars and 3 known flare stars, just like our, you know, just like your MWA paper, right? Like that paper exists no matter what you find on the way.
Okay.
But on the way, you could find something that is like
cool.
Worth its own thing. Yeah.
And presumably, you know, you never have somebody come along and do something else with the same data that you've now produced and published, you know, stacking some kind of
index
on top of each other. Right? Whatever. Presumably that's been done.
I've always been confused about polarization stacking because how do you deal with those signs?
Yeah, the sign, probably your absolute value or something. Mm. I don't know. It
gets messy with the noise.
Yeah.
Circular feeds are better for that because you get right and left. Circular polarization.
Well, leakage is worse in circular feeds.
Mm. For circular images.
Yes. For circular polarization stacking, circular feeds is good.
Now we get right and left as well. Yeah, plus V is right.
Or wrong. Yeah, but the problem is if you stack 10 unknown objects, then they might be right or left.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
I think I see.
So it's the same thing as stacking XX and YY images.
Yeah.
But instead, you stack R and LL.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, ASCAP is in the circular instrument, so this is all this hypothetical rubbish anyway.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think I would just start by taking the absolute value anyway.
Yeah.
Stacking that. Probably is fine. Weird noise, but whatever. So, on what time scale are we going to be doing, when I say we? ATNF, on what time scale are images going to be produced?
For racks?
For racks, yeah.
Well, there's already like quite a lot, right? Now,
yeah.
but not Stokes V.
And a lot of those will have to be redone because of the recent discovery problems with the band pass.
Mm-hmm.
Flagging. It's a minor issue, but it meant there's a lot of artifacts in some of those images. So I think
for those that are not in the channel, that was the plot from a few last week.
So I think Julia was saying something like she does 60 fields per day, something like that.
So grey is observed, yellow is.
So actually, the figure that I remember was it was about 1.7 times real time.
Right.
So. You know, basically it took, 2 weeks to observe, so it'll take 1.7 times 2 weeks, say a month to generate all the images. As for Stokes I, I mean, that needs deconvolution, it's obviously more complicated. Stokes V, as I said, you could probably do that maybe 4 times faster without really trying.
I think what Possum's going to have to decide, we've already talked about that a little bit this week, for the linear polarization part, is whether we're going to be, you know, trying to take the visibilities off somewhere else and do the continuum cube imaging there in QNU. If, as seems like it might be the case, you know, it turns out that ASCAP is unwilling to devote that much processing time because it's a huge overhead to do the cubes.
Mm.
But I think in this case, it's unlikely that they'll say, we're not going to do a broadband Stokes V image.
Even QNU, I can't see why they wouldn't do it. It's not really that much of an overhead.
Well, I think another thing we should do in this RACS conversation is make a clear statement now that we've had this discussion. We're really keen to do Stokes V survey. Let's talk about whether they're going to do it or whether we should, you know, do the processing separately or whatever, and say it as a well-defined thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Indeed.
Okay. I'm rather done as an action. Say to Rax, we're doing. Hi, Dave. If you're listening, we're doing a Stokes v Rax. Yeah.
Is there anything that we have to worry about? I mean, it seems like it's, you know, from a technical point of view, it seems like it's dead easy, basically.
You could even do, well, like, the tricks that Craig's trying to do at the moment in terms of mapping the leakage, you could even do things like that too, if you really wanted to push it a bit further.
Yeah, I think we would want to push it a bit further.
Yeah. But at least it's the first pass. If you're just looking for the outliers, it should be pretty easy. As Taros and Andrew were saying, most of the outliers we're looking for are fairly significant. They'll be at least 10% or higher. So they should be reasonably easy to pick out from just leakage.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the mosaic images.
In the mosaic images, yeah. In the beam images, the leakage is really bad, actually, in a lot of the beams. Yeah. But the mosaic drives it all down into the... Well, drives it down considerably.
But there's almost no reason why you look at just the beam images for this anyway, because you don't gain anything. They're not taken at different times, so you're not going to look for potential transient scene in one as opposed to the other, because they're all co-observed.
Mm.
So you don't really, you wouldn't really gain anything by doing that.
By looking at the beam images? No, I've put in the font, so. I mean, you could be really unlucky where, so, you know, you've got at the adjoin between two footprints. You know,
yes,
flips on
that's a different story.
But,
is Rex interleaved?
Yeah.
That one was. The subsequent Rex wasn't. So Test 4, they didn't use it anyway.
Oh, yeah, three,
and it was a slightly different pitch. So that's what I meant, that they're probably going to be reobserving all these anyway, because the interleave they used wasn't the one that they really wanted. So they'll reobserve because of that. And then part of the reason of observing Rex the way that we did was also to understand what effect the sun has.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably if we find out that the sun has an effect, you'll observe in a slightly
later on
different
in the
way.
Year, yeah.
The other thing is that Dave's tests show that, I guess it's all quite obvious in hindsight, but you really want to stay as close to the meridian when you're doing the observations so that you get a more circular beam.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the observations we had were, you know, basically all over the place, low elevations, high elevations, so the beam shape varied dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't control it at very low declinations or very high declinations. But for like 70% in between, you can get reasonable beams.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is that, you can't do anything near the sun, right?
Observe the sun?
Yeah.
I guess it depends on how well it attenuates the outside of the beam. So I assume if it is in the side light, it's going to... pretty nasty. But, you know, these are all things that we're trying to understand better. You know, how close can you get to the sun before it becomes a problem?
Mm-hmm.
And
Rax will catch on fire.
And Rax will tell us that, at least Rax test 4 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And, of course, you'll have parts of the sky that are covered by the moon, so you probably have to reobserve those anyway.
Yep.
It's not a very large area. Yeah. So I've got to go in about 15 minutes.
Likewise.
So what do we... Should we talk about scope at all? I mean, it's pretty clear that, you know, there's a few people that are, you know, really interested and are going to do this. But, you know, should we open it up to a broader crowd at all? Or, I mean, who's actually going to do the work? And are there the people we should involve?
Yeah, well, I was actually going to say that's a good question to ask Emil as well. Like, you do lots of this processing, you know, as part of your main mission and on the side for fun and, you know, like, all, no, I mean, it's not always the thing. You've often got these processing things happening on the side, but is this something you actually want to do, or should someone else be, you know, taking that load off and doing it? Or is it something where you want to process all these Stokes V images and then share them with everyone? Like, what, how do you see your role in terms of people treading on your toes or helping? Do you know what I mean?
So I'm happy for others to do it. I'll say that up front. Because my main role in ASCAP is really to do commissioning type work.
Exactly.
So if something goes wrong, that's where I come into it and try to understand what's going on and how to fix it or overcome it. So most of my work is actually picking off the fields that cause trouble to everyone else and try to understand, okay, why is it causing trouble and how do we alleviate that problem. So many of the fields that I have looked at have been these sorts of fields where the sun is close to the field or the moon or, you know, whatever it may be, where there's weird artifacts or, you know, like this bandpass problem that we recently encountered. So, yeah, I don't think I'll be the person who just goes through and starts processing all the racks. I can do chunks of it and I could set up
yeah.
demonstrations of how to do that. I don't think I'd be the one actually processing huge chunks of it, unless, you know, there's a particular field where you need something specialized.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, high time resolution or
yep.
Whatever it may be. That would be my thought.
Yeah. No, that's good to know. Because, I mean, so I've got a few students starting in about a month,
mm-hmm.
PhD students. There's certainly one of them could, you know, take on that role if that was, some, you know, if it was, if no one else is doing it. But, and a new postdoc starting at some point in the next few months, but not on the timescales of, you know, like that we could do this quicker than that, I think. So that's my perspective. I have people who can help, yes.
And it's not a difficult thing to get started with. I mean, there's a few little gotchas, but once you're over those, it's relatively easy to pass it through a pipeline.
Aiden's just hired a postdoc. We'll start in a month or something, right?
And
her job is supposed to be science with racks.
Yes. I think that her focus is more likely, from what I've heard, to be like extragalactic, you know, AGN and stuff.
I think that's right.
Which is like fine. I mean, that's actually, in a way, that's actually a more substantial thing that needs to be done with RACS is sort out what's the continuum survey, you know, the continuum extragalactic survey catalog kind of thing is a huge thing, but
it's a huge job.
Yeah. But presumably this could be related out of it.
I guess what I'm asking is, you know, should we basically just keep it like amongst a few of us and via this channel basically, or if we should cast a net a bit?
I think if people are interested in getting involved, like I don't think it's a problem to see if people want to get involved. Like in the last VAST telecon, I said like quite clearly, we're getting RACS data. To get involved, you have to actually be at that stage of wanting to help with data, not just, you know, get science results directly. But if you want to know how to get involved, kind of let me know and people can. I mean, I don't think there's been a rush of people saying, tell me how I can reduce data.
Right.
But my own team at Sydney, we can definitely get more involved. Like, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
So I've told people in VAST, I haven't told them this specific circular polarization survey. I just mean in general, doing variability with RACS, let me know if you want to get involved.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think the message has kind of gotten out to Possum a little bit too. I mean, this busy week is supposedly focused on RACS.
Yeah.
Mostly has been, actually.
And we're going to have our VAST RACS busy week in, when did I say? July.
July sometime.
Yeah, in July.
Right. Yeah. As a university, is it?
Yeah, at Sydney. Yeah. Yep.
In July.
Yeah.
Would I be welcome to join her?
Yeah. Are you not in VAST?
I just realized I just invited myself. Sorry about that.
I thought you were in VAST. Sorry.
I can't keep
track of all the number of people. Okay. You should just join. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, you can come anyway, of course. Yeah. I'll forward you the information.
All right. Yeah.
So I think it's totally cool to invite more people to get involved. I think we're on the same page. The people who get involved at the early stage, they should be coming to try and actually help process stuff.
Yeah, that's how stuff gets done.
Right? For RACS, that's what I believe Dave and co wanted, a team of people who are actually doing stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Hmm.
Okay, good. Well, I think we'll continue with Possum to, you know, get people involved, and, you know, noting again that, you know, most of the people within Possum will be involved in the, or be interested in the linear polarization part. Some fraction will be interested in circular as well.
A very minor comment before probably wrapping up if people don't have more comments, but very minor comment. You said that we can link, I found the link to the EMU talk and the other talks from this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I can look at them, so they're presumably public,
yep.
But are they meant to be, like, can I share this with the VAST team and say this is the planned EMU pilot survey field?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because people are interested in knowing where EMU is planning to look, mm-hmm. so they know what kind of is already being covered.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Before you do that, I'll email Josh and I'll CC you and say, you know, just pointing out it is public.
Because if they don't plan it to be public, it is public. Because I've just looked at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll CC you. I'll just verify with him that he's okay with that.
Okay. All right.
Good.
So next steps, yeah, we should talk anyway about like possible co-supervision of students and stuff.
Yeah,
and right. Then about more specific things. But yeah, does anyone have any questions or comments? No.
Good. Okay. Good. Well, we should have some kind of, maybe we should set up, I don't want to set up a meeting, like a telecom or something, but we should, how do we, yeah, just through the Slack, I guess it's probably fine, isn't it?
Yeah. And for now, yeah. I think we should feel confident to get started on some things of interest when we have the people available, and we should just tell everyone what we're doing. And I feel like that satisfies all the requirements at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying, hey, everyone, I'm working on this with these people,
yeah.
And this is what we're doing.
Right. Okay. Meanwhile, the meeting that I have in about 5 minutes, in 5 minutes is sort of a management-y type meeting here, where I think I will raise that, you know, I see this as a potential risk that we're, you know, letting people sort of charge headlong into science territory without any guidance or
controls. So. Yeah, again, without going into details in this open meeting,
yeah.
Well, actually, maybe we can just have a quick discussion now off the recording for 5 minutes before your next meeting, because
okay.
I have some thoughts that came up in the last few days
okay.
that I'm in enough to discuss with Emil. But it's better just to talk separately.
Mm-hmm. Fine. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, cool.
Good.
I mean, we can just have a quick chat out here or something.
Yeah, I'm just going to grab my laptop and so I can head off straight away.
Yep. Then I'm going back home and doing school pickup and stuff. So if you guys want to travel back, you can wait and I'll be walking to the station, or you can just head off yourselves.
Okay.
I'll be back in about an hour or so. So you might have headed off by then, actually.
The only thing I was
going to
talk to you about was the job application, it sounds like.
I think
the other
George is
happy.
Yeah.
Go ahead
and
do
it.
Ah, are
you going? Yeah,
one thing
I might do regarding all this.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it would be useful to actually get what sort of like rates expectations for ourselves.
Yeah.
So I want to do that calculation. Yeah, sure.
It's
a nice demonstration of image plane.
Definitely.
So, also, fine.
Yeah. Very exciting.
I did have a quick look at variance and I couldn't find it.
That's a shame.
It wasn't predicted there wouldn't be.
Yeah, it's quite high. But anyway, I was actually, was actually thinking about this question, but I didn't get a chance to ask. So apart from the data processing, let's say the imaging and whatever, so do you have like source extraction and sort of catalog cross match and everything for racks or?
I don't.
Yeah, but is that but sort of already be. Developed in?
So Adam, I think, has been doing.
Yeah, Adam has been.
Source finding and comparisons.
That's right.
So it's been intensity as opposed to.
Yeah.
I think Adam's been focusing on. Sums of abstracts at this stage, but there's also the possibility of polarization or whatever.
Yeah. So I guess for the Stokes V, I guess we are not only interested in like 20 sigma outlier, right? We're also interested in like 7 sigma outliers.
Mm. Yeah. They're trying to work out what that sigma is.
So that's why I asked how bad is the leakage and everything. Mm. Because I mean, presumably, when pulsars, they are faint and the circular polarization is not necessarily that strong. But I think there must be pulsar missing.
What I think can be done, and this is probably the easiest thing, is once we've got a gazillion racks fields, and in fact, we've already got quite a few, you build up a map. Of the leakage as a function of where you are within the field. And then you could just use that as a lookup table. So is there something above or below that amount of leakage?
Yeah.
And then you can just exclude it if it's obvious as a something that's above that.
Yeah.
Because that would be the easiest way.
The tricky thing, I mean, if you're doing that with a single bin, the tricky thing is that George saw you saw that the leakage changes the way that the leakage is not sort of doesn't vary constantly
in the same way across every single beam, right?
Yeah, sorry, I meant for a field.
Yeah, for a whole field.
So once you've mosaicked everything.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You'd have like a certain leakage pattern in that mosaic.
Yeah.
And you could measure that in every single Rax field you've had to build up some sort of a, I don't know how you do it, but some sort of a surface, I guess, to that.
Yeah.
And then that'll give you an idea of where actually probably just sort of nearest neighbor type thing. You know, if you find a new source in a new field, you can just compare it against everything you've measured previously. If it sticks out above that, then you know it's probably something.
But yeah, the question is still like, you know, how do you know something three times or five times above that level is actually real? Especially if it's a faint source, it might be quite tricky.
Yeah.
So it'd be good to know and be able to push down the leakage further, I think.
Yeah.
Well, that's effectively what you're doing by having that.
Yeah.
I mean, one way is to just basically subtract that once you've determined it.
Okay.
Yeah, there's many things you could try. I mean, you could also fit it per beam and then subtract it and then mosaic it. You know, but that would be...
I would think that that should work. Hopefully that wouldn't add horrible system headaches.
Yeah, that's always my concern, because especially as you go further out, you're fitting all the... less accurate, and if that ends up blowing up the edges,
and at the edges is where it's going to be worst anyway.
Yes, but these are all things we can try. It's all part of the experience. Make your own adventure.
So we'll keep discussing what we could do with the Rax data, and at the moment, are you in the Rax channel?
Oh, I think I am, actually.
Yeah, okay. Yes, well, if we discuss something, we'll include you, and you can, you know, so that we all know, right, what's happening.
Yeah, sounds good.
If you have any ideas, post them in there, so that, you know,
So I was actually asking Ammo, so, well, I'm certainly not expert on, like, imaging and everything, but I was asking Ammo whether we have actually source extraction and course match pipeline or whatever, once we have all the sources, or once we have all the images.
Yeah.
Because I think that will be, very useful and interesting, and
usually for stuff like this, we just quickly do it ourselves, because it's so easy to use, like, one of the many source finders.
Yeah.
And then with the pulsars in particular, it's dead easy, right? Because there's only, like, 3,000. You just cross-match with that, and, you can do it with a few lines of Python.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we can share code with you. I mean, we have many. Yeah. We don't have an official pipeline, but we have many, many implementations of the same thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
And thanks for the Parks observations.
Oh, no worries. It was just easy.
Yeah.
Cool. So I guess I'll talk to you guys later.
Yeah.
Okay. See you. Right. I'm going back to.
To
the city.
Mm.
But, yeah.
Something wrong with your laptop.
Yeah, the screen has been, for 3 days, kind of death spiraling. I initially thought that it was something to do with plugging it in and out of monitors and actually logging in. Yeah. But I realized as it got worse that it's nothing to do with software. It's just... you just knock the screen at all, even a tiny bit, and it turns off.
Yeah.
And it just does that all day. So any time I move my laptop around anywhere, I've been using it at home, just carrying it in that position. Like, if I keep it exactly like that, it's fine. But the minute you even, like, move it a tiny bit, it just goes off.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take it into the Apple shop, and they're probably going to take it away and send it to hospital, aren't they? Or the abattoir. So I feel like I'm going to be without my laptop for a little bit, and I stupidly haven't arranged a backup laptop. So,
do you get regular backups?
Oh yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. I just mean I haven't arranged to have a. Yes, I don't have a spare laptop. I should have asked at work. I just don't. I normally at home we have old laptops, but we just don't at the moment because we gave them all to people. So, yeah. So I'll just be doing science on my phone for the next day.
I've SSH'd into our machines and my phone. It's not very fun.
No, I'm not going to be doing SSH. I'm going to be doing email and Slack.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's also not fun.
yeah.
All right. See you guys.
Yep.
Yeah. Well.
I'll see you next week, probably.
Yep. Normal meeting next week. Yeah. Cool.
Good.
Okay.
All right. Good. See you around.
See you. See you. See you. Bye.
There's something I was going to say, and I can't remember what it was. It's kind of important.
I think, you know, with this Stokes fee thing, I think we should, there's enough passes that I think we should have caught one flare at least. If you're doing the entire sky.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked if we didn't get at least one. Yeah. I'd be disappointed. Yeah, I agree. It'd be pretty sad if we covered the whole sky doing anything.
I mean, even when you did your Gleam MWA Stokes V, you found Proxima with like 4.5 sigma or something, I think, I remember.
Yeah, it was a very marginal detection.
Yeah, but, you know.
That was Proxima.
Yeah.
Good job, I forgot already.
Yeah.
that's right, yes.
Yeah. I remember this when I was, like, planning the whole shebang.
Oh, gosh, it feels like decades ago already.
Yeah. Yeah, the hard thing about it is that Sene is in the field.
In the MWA.
In the MWA field.
Yeah.
So Christine's had a test of some processing a couple of nights, and the RTS calibration is just a mess.
It's the one downside of having a wide field of view.
Mm-hmm.
So let's check this. My son just posted something. I'm not sure if it's important or... Oh, okay. He past few days, the bus just kept driving past him, the bus to school. And then this morning, when it happened again, sort of asked him, do you actually, you know, hail the bus when it's going past, or do you just expect that it's going to stop? He said, oh, no, we just expect it's going to stop.
Yeah. You have to wave it down.
You have to wave to the bus driver. Because he has absolutely no idea if you're trying to catch that bus or a different bus.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not going to stop.
Or if you're just sitting there having a think.
I don't know what he was doing.
No.
But it's so frustrating because it's now the second or third time it's happened. So one time he just managed, the second bus that went past actually stopped, so he was able to get onto it. But
is this a school bus or a public bus?
Yes. it's kind of weird because it's the bus that goes to his school, but I think it's a public bus.
Mm.
But there's nothing much else between us and the school, so it's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah.
He doesn't pay to get on it, so he's got like a school Opal card sort of thing, but that doesn't work anywhere else.
Yeah, there's a similar thing for... my partner's sister, out in Campbelltown, there's one bus and no one gets on it except for the school kids.
Yeah. So I think the bus driver must have changed recently. So the previous guy just knew, kids from that school, I better stop there.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether they're waving or looking at their phone or whatever. But this new bus driver probably just doesn't realise or I don't know. Or he's just doing his job the way he's supposed to be doing it. it's very frustrating.
Yeah. So has that meant you've had to drop him off?
In the two times where it happened, the first time my wife was actually at home working, so she was able to drop him off.
Yeah.
But today I just got to work and I get the message saying, the second bus went past and didn't pick him up. And that's where it's sort of like, it can't possibly be happening so frequently. And I asked him, did you actually wave down the bus to Oh, no, I didn't think of doing that. So my wife was sort of halfway to work and had to stop and go back.
Yeah. You live and learn.
his message back to me was lesson learned. Thy learned to insult thou in the language of Shakespeare. Why did he send that to me? Remember what I wanted to tell Tara about. I thought it was something important too. So do you know if Adam's actually actively looking at any of this data? Because I never get any sort of feedback from him, so I don't know.
I mean, did you see? I don't know if you were at the meeting where he's got these like really nice web pages where he can compare sums and racks. Like he's built this really nice web tool that, you know, allows you to click on a source, see its postage stamps and classify it as a real thing or as a spurious correspondence or whatever.
Okay, no, it happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he keeps saying that every so often I get a message where he'll say, I'll compare something against sums or
inverses,
whatever it may be. I thought, okay, that's great. It'd be really interesting to hear what you find. And then I just hear crickets in the background, so I don't know. Is it working? Is it not working? Do I have to do something more to improve the data or add? I just don't know. It'd be good just to get feedback.
Some feedback. Yeah.
Maybe he does a lot of that internally and he just assumes that.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't heard much about what he's doing either. I assume Tara knows.
Because even the, like, we have this continuum and polarization meeting for ASCAP. And it's often. Yeah, you know, everyone will go around the table and talk about what they're doing. And it's not up until the end that I realize, oh, he was actually in the meeting as well. But he's kind of like in stealth mode, so we don't hear anything about what he's done. So, there's just no feedback.
Yeah. Yeah, not sure.
Because it'd be nice to know at least. Because I always wondered, should I start maybe doing that myself if nothing's happening? But, you know, I think, why would I reinvent
the
wheel if it's already been
done? It's got a great wheel. It's a fantastic tool he's built.
What color is it?
blue and white.
Can it be taken nasal? Sorry, that's Petrarch's go to
the wheel. Yeah. Christine posted a Chime exoplanet detectability thing. I'm scared about Chime. I just feel like it's a very competitive and political space.
The problem is it can't localize anything.
Yeah.
So it's just, something over there went bang.
Yeah.
We don't have no idea where, but it did.
Is localization better or worse than like parks and?
I think worse because that's a good question actually. I'm not 100% sure because it's got a reasonable amount of collecting area, but I don't think the cylinders are that far away from each other.
So, no, they're not.
So the overall aperture is not humongous, and it's a low frequency. Instrument as well, so it's. I don't think it's better than parks. But I'm only guessing there. But I thought I heard rumors that they're going to build some more.
Okay.
Further out, just to improve the resolution. the size of the beam.
Yep.
But I don't know if that's actually happening or not. Did she just post that recently?
Yeah, in the Radio Exoplanets channel. Right. There are so many channels.
Yes. And tools. So we've got this other one called Mattermost.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like yet another layer of Slack
yeah.
in a
different tool. World, yeah. Oh.
It's actually higher than better than I thought it would be.
Mm.
I'm on this exoplanet bandwagon. Because until you can clearly distinguish between the star and the exoplanet, it's so hard to.
Yeah. And the problem is that they're mostly expected to be at low frequencies, and
the resolution
is rubbish. It's going to be really, really hard.
Except, I guess, in low far weather. Got some extended baseline.
True.
Maybe. So actually, I guess you went here for the morning tea. George was saying that they're actually trying to do some kind of like VLBI with MWA. So thinking of putting like a station sort of elsewhere in Australia and then just do VLBI specifically for this kind of science case.
That would be
solved between the star and the
planet. That would be good. Is that feasible? Like,
technically, I don't see why not.
Yeah,
it's challenging.
Mm.
It's not overly expensive to build a station.
Yeah. Chuck some PVC down.
I mean,
a little bit more than that.
Yeah, you need to, I guess, something to actually do the beam forming so on. I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't do it.
Mm.
With a bit of resourcing.
Yep. Just need the resources and the people.
Yeah. And the money.
Yeah. of course. How could you forget?
You'd want a few stations as well, just to improve the UV coverage.
Mm.
Technically, it's all, it should be feasible. I mean, LOFAR does it over reasonable distances. And, you know, we could do the same, perhaps better, because we've got a bigger country to do it on. We don't have to deal with all the politics.
Yeah, and probably less. I imagine there's more radio quiet sites.
Yes.
Than they have.
Yeah.
Which is good.
So I think George's idea was actually to follow some of the, you know, where Arnett goes, just absorb and feed off that and put a station.
Well, that's a good idea. So I never did hear one.
So that you're close to all of the infrastructure that you need, power and network.
Yeah.
Whether it goes ahead, I don't know. But it, I mean, for this sort of thing, it'd be really
cool. Yeah, it'd be good. There's one paper by not Greg Hallinan, but Bastian, I think it was, and Greg and co. from Caltech and NRAO, and they claimed to have they saw a flare at 5 gigahertz, I think, and it was like 2.5 sigma off the position of the star.
Right.
And they were claiming that that was in either a new exoplanet or that the previously published orbital ephemerides of the known exoplanet around that star were wrong. I feel like that is perhaps a claim that's a bit too far.
A bit far, yeah. That sounds a bit...
lending a lot of weight to a 2.5 sigma thing that...
Yeah. Yeah, it does sound a bit...
Yeah, and 5 gigahertz as well is not really... Yeah, that if it's this type of emission we expect... You know, 5 gigahertz implies kilogauss magnetic fields. Which I don't think we would expect that on a planet. It'd be more like a cool dwarf star than a planet. But whatever. Anyway. And then I don't know how public this is or if you've heard about it, but Joe was looking at cross-matching Gaia and LOFAR.
Yeah, I'd actually, Ron mentioned it.
Mm.
Actually, I saw Tara post it as well, one state. Someone posted
Tara
it anyway.
Posted it, yeah. Joe's got a proposal for LOFAR with M-dwarfs. But he'd done some early work and found a highly polarized quiescent M dwarf over like 16 hours. And
that's a lot of LOFAR time.
Yeah, this was for the LOT survey.
Right.
So it was just in the LOT survey field. And the LOT survey is similar to EMU in that it's long, it's 8 hour long tracks per pointing.
Oh, okay.
So that makes it good for stellar science as well. And yeah, they were initially thinking that it was a planet, but Proxima Cen has similar behavior of sort of in the first night. Remember the ASCAP, it just sits there.
Yeah, it just sits there. I think there's probably some structure behind the scenes that we don't see.
Mm.
Probably if you averaged it the right way, you may find something. But there's nothing obvious. It just looks like quiescent emission.
Yeah. So I don't think based on that alone, I don't think you can say it's a planet. Anyway.
I'm surprised they have such long observations.
For lots.
How many pointings do they have? Because it must take forever to survey the...
Maybe, George is the person to ask.
That's true.
But... Yeah, each track, each pointing is 8 hours, and they overlap slightly. So for some parts, you'll have 16 hours all up, but slightly reduced sensitivity.
Because their beam is not particularly large.
Large, yeah. But now LOTS is out, and they've got a really deep, wide survey. So they've just spent a lot of time observing.
Wide, or is it wide?
Well, it's all the northern sky, I think, north of Deck Zero.
Well, that would take decades to observe such a... Because we've got 1,000 pointings with ASCAP, and that's 36 square degrees. And if you did that if you spent 8 hours on that, that would be like... Well, if you only do it during night, it would be like 3 years.
I don't know.
curious now. Is it double S?
Yep.
Good. Low far. Single S will be a pain to try and find.
2 meter sky survey.
Oh, no.
Maybe it's only part of the sky. I'm not sure.
Crappy abstract. I think they tell you up front exactly what they've done. And it says how many sources they found, but not over what resolution or sensitivity.
Yeah.
Or, it's a PDF. Oh, gosh. The nerve of some people.
It's clickbait. You won't believe what we found.
And we got a deal for you.
One weird source.
Buy now, get one free. These engines cover 424 square degrees. So it's like half a MWA point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... Well, is that right?
How old is this paper?
November 2018.
Okay. Right, so the very recent. Yeah.
Mm. Right, so it is a smaller part of the sky. That would make sense then. Because I'd be shocked if they could do the whole sky spending 8 hours for pointing, because I can't remember exactly what their beam is, but it wasn't large.
Mm.
Ron mentioned that aspect of Joe's work. He says, oh, he's wasting his time moving away from the really interesting science stuff to his
bloody stars. Of course he would say that.
Ron's pretty funny at some time. They get so excited by some things, you know, the things it's kind of like, oh, my
God. Yeah. But he was so excited about this Proxima Centauri.
Yeah, because that was something different. Whereas, yeah. You know, just seeing the star not doing anything.
Yeah.
I think he's more interested in things that go boom.
Yeah.
Bump in the night.
It seems like Proxima Centauri, every time it's been looked at 20 centimeters, it's just been doing something.
Yeah.
Which is
and
great.
Different things
yeah,
as well.
And different things as well, which is great.
Because you can clearly see like three different behaviors. In,
yeah.
You know, even in the four observations, well, 3 and a bit observations
yeah.
that we had.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're totally quiet.
First night, it was like, okay, you could just see it, but it wasn't doing much. And second night, bang.
Yeah.
And then
two different, yeah. Bang and woof. And then third night was a little bit of stuff.
Bit of, yeah, I think it also had it was in the third night we had another bang and a slight woof.
Yeah.
I can't remember anyway.
Yeah. I think that was the fourth night when we also had the compact array.
But definitely lots of cool stuff in that data.
Yeah.
I'm glad you managed to get that because it'd be really depressing if it was like that really long MWA observation we had at UV SETI where after those few sort of random observations and cool stuff in a couple
yeah,
of
yeah.
them. And then you say, okay, now let's look at it for a really long time and then nothing.
Well, yeah, that's what
burp.
I'm...
It was like,
yeah.
Come on.
Yes. Yeah, and that's what I'm working on at the moment. I'm like a third of the way through that follow-up
yeah.
processing. Because supercomputing, and getting the RTS running on different systems has just been an absolute nightmare. but I processed about a third of the data, and we've seen there was one two-minute blip, like in one two-minute OSID, on the third night, and I've seen nothing since then. I mean, I haven't done anything like averaging further, but
yeah.
Nothing's obvious. So
sad.
We'll see what happens in the last two-thirds of the data. There's still a bit to get through.
Was that the, I'm trying to remember now, was that the data where there was a lot flagged? A lot of the tiles were down?
Yeah, that was early phase two data.
Yeah,
that's
a shame.
Yeah. I've tried running this, on, Bracewell, the GPU machine, Syro, and I know Mitch has gotten it running. I haven't managed to, though. It seems to just hang.
Can you connect to his account?
Yeah.
His version, because that's all I
used. Well, I'm using his version.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's strange that.
I wonder if it's a permission thing or something.
No. No, I don't think so. Because do you know Xiang Chang at Perth? Working with George.
Oh, Xiang.
Yeah. She's, I think, done a couple of successful tests.
Oh.
Of calibration and imaging. So I haven't, the last time I really looked at this in detail was mid-March, and then this UV SETI ASCAP thing came up and turned all my attention to that, and then Proxima Send came up and now I'm paying all my attention to that.
I guess it probably makes sense to put that on the back burner if it's not.
I'd like to get it done though. I mean, it's been a thing that's sort of been with me for my whole PhD, and I'd love to publish it. We're also trying out the software.
Go for the low-hanging fruit first.
Yeah. We're also trying it out on the Shanghai SKA data center cluster as well, but same sort of problem. Ran it for 12 hours on one OBSID and just hung.
That's bizarre, because it's usually pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. It should be quick. They only have one GPU node, but even then, it shouldn't take more than 12 hours.
Because, I normally used to, because it was often difficult to get into the GPU queue.
Mm.
I mean, you need it for the calibration, I guess. But the actual imaging, regardless of whether you use CPU or GPU.
I mean, it's a stoked-y dirty image.
Yeah.
It's fine. Apparently.
since I didn't receive any AC emails.
The few, the proud. You don't happen to have a CD drive in your computer, do you?
That's a CD.
Exactly.
Oh, proposal. Compulsory viewing?
Mm-hmm.
Compulsory viewing?
Obviously. There's some information in there I want to extract.
Well, Pity Alec left. He had a CD drive.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking that. I was like, geez, if only I'd gotten this 24 hours earlier. No problem at all. Go see if Nathan has an external CD drive. Kind of doubt it, but you never know.
I'm supposed to say that with an accent.
I'll be back.
It's a strange combination of posts. Thumb up, thumb down. Great.
I think it means, did you get or not get the talk? And Harry put a thumbs up.
Oh. Sorry, I just saw a lot of thumbs.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do all these thumbs mean? Yeah.
Secret code.
I love the name of that paper. Lost cone instability modulation due to a magnetohydrodynamic sausage.
Is this the black hole? Sorry, which one was it?
This, the paper up here in the channel.
Oh, sorry.
It's got to do with solar stuff.
Oh, sorry.
But probably also has applications to some of the stuff we've seen as well.
All right. sausages.
Yeah.
Democracy ones. just hate it when they make you post the talks way before you actually have to present. Partially because I'm always changing at the last minute, but also because sometimes you cater it depending on what talks have gone on during the conference.
Mm. I wonder if it'll be like, don't bring your own laptop, just, you know.
Click on my machine or whatever.
Yeah, it might just be like all on one machine, download it from the slides repository or whatever.
Which is this?
The ASA talks.
All right, that did just come out. Cool. I didn't read the email properly. Is that normal for ASA?
No.
It's probably a good thing, though. Like, from like a running things perspective.
Oh, yeah. From a presenting point of things, it's a pain in the ass.
No, I presented at C3 Dis earlier in the year, and they also made us have it a day before, and it's terrible. This is July, I mean, so that's a bit different. Like the first day or 2 days before the conference or something terrible. That means I can't work on it during the conference.
Yeah, that's...
That's the big deal.
Did you apply for the talk?
Yeah. On the UV SETI work, I was...
Oh. It's a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, they rejected me last year, so... Mm. Failure. They're like, nah, go away. No one likes radioluminosity functions. I mean, they're right.
If I had a choice, I would have had my last year's talk as a poster and this talk as a... this thing as a talk.
Did you get a poster?
Yeah, okay. I got a poster. I also applied for
I'd have to admit I've never been a big fan of speaking at the ASA.
Mm.
It's a bit too generic.
Mm.
Oh, it's a great way to get an idea of what's happening in the astronomical community.
Yeah.
But it's hard to find the right audience or the right level to get anything out of it. I think also it depends on who's running it. Because
mm.
I always find it a bit odd if they kind of like lean towards giving it to, you know, like tenured staff.
Yeah.
People in, already in very high positions. I feel they should give it more towards postdocs and PhDs. Because they're the ones that need the exposure and to get the feedback on what they're doing, not the old hats.
Yeah. They did the abstract selection in an unbiased way. They did it blind. So they removed names and...
Oh, okay.
So do you want unbiased?
Yeah.
For ASA? That's my question.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's sort of what Emma was just saying. Like, do you really want to have it completely unbiased or do you want to, like, weight it more towards... I wonder if they did weigh it more towards students.
Perhaps it should have been...
Maybe they could have explicitly added that bias back in.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
But
I mean, taking away the bias in terms of you know, which university you go to or what gender you are or what nationality or whatever, that's fine. I totally agree with that. But perhaps in terms of level, there should be some...
It will be interesting to see the statistics of how many people... in who have talk slots are early career or student researchers. Mm. And I expect them to publish that.
Yeah,
so,
they should.
Like, it could well have gone up from last year.
Yeah.
It could well have gone down. It could well have stayed the same.
Yep.
Yeah, who knows?
I mean, similar. I seem to remember, I don't know whether I read what this applied to, but I seem to remember reading one article that said that doing these blind sort of things can actually lead to the opposite effect of what you want sometimes.
Well, in what way?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, that sounds... Sometimes bad things happen.
Yeah.
That sounds very non-committal as a description.
Yeah, well, I guess it depends on what you're trying to do. Because if... I mean, say, for example, you want a gender... perhaps gender equality is not the right word for it.
Gender equity.
Yeah.
Proportional representation.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you don't have a balanced...
But maybe you don't want proportional representation because you want better... Let me say this better. You want less represented people to be overrepresented, which is also something you might want to do.
Yes.
A classic example of this is if you're running outreach programs in STEM, you might have almost no women, but you really don't want a culture of not having any women. So balancing that explicitly makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
For context, I do a bunch of CompSci outreach. And CompSci is pretty bad.
Mm.
It's hard, TM.
So in terms of, like, if it's for reviewing papers, then I totally agree to blind is absolutely perfect. But for this, yeah, I'm not sure if that works quite the way they intended it to work.
We'll see.
Depends whether you think that you're necessarily going to get worse abstracts out of students. I'm not convinced. Particularly if you workshop it with your supervisor.
Yeah.
I don't mean, I think just providing the opportunity more towards students and postdocs as opposed to...
And there's more of them.
That's true, and there's probably a greater proportion.
There's a lot of different ways that could shake out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting what comes out in the stats when afterwards.
Yeah, no, I definitely want to see those. I think that'll be really... fascinating, because it's a big event to do a non-biased, or to do an attempt at removing bias.
Mm.
Very keen to see that. Ooh, that looks nasty.
I
really, it's been a while since we submitted that paper.
That was, yeah, while I was observing.
It's like
a couple, almost, 3 weeks now.
Yeah, almost close to a month, actually.
Yeah, it'll be a month in early June. So I'm hoping to get the free report back pretty soon. Too major to fix up. Let's see.
Yeah. It's a nice easy one.
Mm.
Well, corrections and changes. It's always a bit of a lucky draw.
Yeah.
Get the referee from hell.
God, I gotta go through my referee report next week. Thanks for reminding me.
Thank you.
No, it's probably, what, 100 megabytes maybe or something? It was 700 total, so maybe it's 200 or something.
Yeah.
If you want to have a crack, be my guest.
Not that kind of crack.
I don't think we have anything
on the conveyor. Quite sure that it's a fruitless endeavor.
Did you try one of the Windows machines in the library area?
I tried the Linux machines in there, in the library, the X library, yeah.
Right. I'm just wondering if it's a format that's that must be readable by everything.
So I popped it into two Linux machines, and both of them refused to. I mean, they tried to mount it and said could not mount. I'm assuming the disk is fried. Kylie.
George, could you possibly change the permissions on the field fits files? Because I do not have permission to run a gen on them.
So what?
It's giving me a permission not.
Oh.
Permission denied.
Oh.
Unless I'm doing something wrong.
No, it's probably that I inadvertently have weird permissions in the files. I'll check. Thank goodness I didn't get a talk at the ASA either. Thank God.
It's a win.
That would have been awful.
What? What kind of anti-talk person?
It just requires too much work. It's not,
Especially given you have to pre-submit it this year.
What?
Yeah, you got to submit it on July 5th.
Yeah, the talks have to be uploaded on the Friday before the conference.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Good luck. I think we all know that's not going to happen.
Okay. Oh, geez. What on earth happened to the scaling here? Oh. There we go. That's why everything's broken. Huh, that's weird.
Stokes high.
Mm-hmm.
Oops. Oh, come on. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's Stokes V. One's positive, one's negative. You wouldn't expect that.
What?
No.
Well, I suspect in this case maybe one of them is linearly polarized. Mm. Maybe that's coming through. Just, it's unusual.
So the linkage of Q into, of U into V. Q into V. With ASCAP, right?
Yeah, I think it's Q.
Q into V much more probably.
Yeah.
That's fine. What's the percent residual there, then? I mean, the percent, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so it's 350 and 640, roughly. It's 2.5. Oh, it's tiny. And a half out of 6.4% for that one. That's 3.6. Is it 3.6? All right, so that was about 1%. So that one's actually. Go back.
So that one might have some Q leaking as well.
Yeah, I guess if the... Yeah, it's weird. I don't really know what's going on with that one. Might be an interesting one to follow up.
Yeah.
Oh, it's boring. There's nothing of note.
What's the image that you're trying to? Oh, I see.
Just all the field blah V and I dot fits.
Yeah, that's odd. That I have that permission and V as well. You said,
yeah,
the V should be fine.
Maybe, yeah, let me try it with V.
Well, I'll change, let me just change this first and it should be okay. Chmod. Was it 664 or something? Be fine now, I think.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yep. Yep. Thanks.
Cool. Maybe I'll turn on the lights.
Yeah. I'm getting Z.
That's good.
Yeah.
What we've been missing.
Blech. Go grab myself a coffee. I think at
5:30 we should have a quick wrap up for the day.
double it's only
is it
only this one. Huh. And yet the one that's down here is actually similar.
Similar.
Similar brightness. Not the... quite as bright, but
yeah.
You'd expect to see the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's quite well detected, right?
Yeah.
In the...
But I'm guessing it seems unusual to have it on a double source.
Mm.
So I'm guessing it's probably linearly polarized.
Right. So it's possible that a significant amount of the leakage is coming from Q.
Yes. At least, yeah. I don't know how much, though.
Mm. Do you have the Q images?
No.
Right.
Because we were only discussing these, so I thought I'll just
Label
the V ones.
Yep. So
probably should have created all the other ones as well.
Mm-hmm.
In hindsight. But it's surprising how little there is. It's just bugger all. It's really boring.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there's something new. Lost it again. It's another double. Damn you, doubles.
But it's funny that, you know, one double shows up.
Yeah, with the...
With only one component.
Yeah, yeah, that's really odd. Because I was expecting, maybe one's much weaker than the other, the components, but they weren't really that different enough to make it invisible in one and not the other. It's really...
Not much.
But compared to Stokes Arc, so I've got the Stokes Arc really...
Yeah, full of...
cut at quite a low level.
Yeah.
There's nothing in B. Except when you get to the edges, but that we know
that. Yeah. Is this a beam, a mosaic field?
This is the mosaic. So we've got mosaic fields as
well. Yeah. So the fields are the 36 beams, right?
Yeah. So I've got those and I've got
this. The super mosaic.
Super mosaic. Killer mosaic. It's killing my system or something. It's got another bright source again. Boring. Damn. I get excited when it's a dim source and it's like, okay. Interesting. But there aren't so many of those. I really should do a proper source finding on this.
Yeah.
This is not the most efficient way to find stuff.
Who says that?
It's surprisingly hard in such a big field.
Yeah.
Because you just lose track of where you are.
Yep.
Sounds like when my son plays Minecraft, he just keeps hearing this, oh. I don't know what they are, zombies or something.
But oh, yeah.
Sorry, I'm not calling him a zombie, it's just that sound. So.
Yeah. I think I know the one you're talking about. I'm getting this error with Aegean saying the input contains NAND values. And it's chucking up a value error and not actually giving me a catalog.
Nice.
Have you seen that?
Yes. I had infinities? No, I had something really specific.
That's pretty specific.
No, I did something horrendously wrong. Let me check the Slack, because the ANU gas Slack, because I asked about it. And then I realized that it was actually something else that was doing it.
Hmm. Running plain Aegean on an image and it's being like
it was RFI for me.
That's concerning.
Yeah, I had some like stupid high values and it just died.
Okay, yeah. I'll see.
Just check your channels, like just have
it's
a look.
It's a continuum image.
All right. Eyeball it. Hey, yeah. Use that new tool Alec wrote.
Yeah.
Could you just be getting confused by blank pixels?
Yeah, it doesn't usually get confused by blanks as long as they're flagged NAN.
Yeah.
So if Matplotlib can eat them, a Gene should.
Yes.
That's why it was confusing me, because I was like, I did take out all the NANs.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the NANs. One of my channels was just completely whack.
Right.
Yeah.
Just gonna load it up into KVIS. Have you had an error, George, where a gene says can't find sources because there's NANs or something and shows up a value error?
Nope.
Never heard that? Mm. Bizarre.
Yes.
That's what I'm getting.
But the image has no NANs, I would have thought.
Yeah, I thought so. That looks fine.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that image.
So what does it say exactly? Value error?
That's just on a Stokes eye field. I don't. That's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Should be fine.
Yeah,
I would have thought.
Fine, yeah. That's what I would have thought too.
Well, you don't need a Stokes eye mosaic or catalog, do you? Because you already got the big master Stokes eye catalog.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You don't need that. You just need Stokes V.
Yeah. Well, it still did the same thing on V.
Yeah.
So.
Don't forget the negative flag first.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I initially was just doing it on V and then it was throwing that error, so I thought I'd try it on I in case it was something funny, but
yep.
It's doing the same. So.
That's weird. And this is cast 2,
sure. Yeah, the GM. Is that the right format for the beam?
Yep. You would have chucked a hissy fit anywhere if it didn't like it.
Yep. This shouldn't.
Which directory are you in? Your home directory?
Yeah, my home directory.
That should be okay, I would have thought.
No. That's right, I mean screen.
In screen, you can't do that.
No.
I'm not sure what to say about that, actually. I've never seen that before.
Matthew said he'd seen it in, like, single channels with loads of RFI or whatever.
Yeah.
But that image, I just looked at it and it was fine. There was nothing wrong with it.
That was when I was running it on...
Yeah.
Oh.
It wasn't super obvious, like, but if you're using something that has a good scale, it should still show up as dodgy.
It could be in the part where it's trying to find a local RMS and all that stuff. Try using Bane and then doing auto load in a GN.
Okay.
So it loads the Bane generated maps, you know, RMS in background.
Yes. Okay.
Doesn't it just call Bane internally? If you don't pass it?
No, I don't think so.
Huh.
No, I think the whole point of Bane is that a GN, the way it's done in a GN isn't as efficient or as clever or something like that.
Oh, wow, okay, I did not know that. I mean, I always run Bane separately anyway, just so I can debug that bit if I need to. But...
I could be misremembering this, but I thought that was the point.
Yes,
otherwise,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
But, I mean, then if it breaks in Bane, you'll know, so...
Yes.
That's true. Yeah.
All right, I'll run Bane.
Because that's the way I do it. I never run it letting a GN take care of it. That stuff internally. I always
okay.
do Bane. Yeah.
Do Bane first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone know ordering food delivery to this place, what you meant to send it to? I vaguely recall there's an instruction.
out it's the in front. The kitchen, isn't it?
Corner of...
Yeah, I can just walk outside and get it. It'll be fine.
Yeah, maybe you could send it to across the road, but then say, actually, please deliver it to the driveway.
No, there is an address, isn't there?
I mean, it shows up as CSR in Marsfield, say. So.
Huh.
I know Uber has a booking point for it, so I imagine that's fine.
Right.
Because getting an Uber from out the front is easy.
Uh-huh.
Oh my god, you can order Hungry Jack's delivered. Can you imagine being so sad?
Yeah, it seems a bit sad, doesn't it? Are you about to do that?
I'm not going to do that. I'm going to order something tastier than that. I'm just really, really hungry for some reason.
Right. Due to it being almost dinner time.
So many.
It's a pulsar.
What?
I wonder if that's the one that you found. Is it 2129
minus
57?
Yep. Yep.
Box.
Darn you.
You don't really want to find another one, do you?
Probably not.
Soy flavored sauce. What on earth? That's
soy,
sound right.
Not soy sauce, it's soy flavored sauce.
That's suspicious.
Like fries with that. Oh, crap.
Can order Domino's through Deliveroo? Super weird.
Do they have their own delivery service?
Yeah, they literally have their own. It's one of the largest delivery services in the country.
Yeah. Well, it's not big enough.
That's so weird.
It's probably some corporate deal.
Something magical, yeah. All right, what's good in Sydney? Asian food is good in Sydney. God, I could get takeaway from the same restaurant I went last 2 days in a row. It was very good.
one thing I don't like about this computer is the where they've got the page up and page down buttons.
It's actually different from mine.
Oh yeah, it's awful because if you kind of miss the arrow key, you end up page down.
Yeah.
Where am I?
It's a real page turner.
His email's a real page turner.
Is yours the touchscreen flip screen version or just the basic?
No, the basic one.
Yeah.
And actually, I didn't get the full HD. I got the standard HD.
Yeah, whatever. I'm the same. I've got the basic, no fancy screen, standard HD. I don't need to see my code in like 4K resolution.
Exactly. And it also kills the battery life as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one of the reasons I got this computer was for the battery life.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, this has been pretty good for me. Very happy with how it's been going generally. After like 2.5 years, it's gotten pretty good.
Cool.
So, yeah.
What kind of computer is that you've got? Because I'm kind of looking.
XPS.
Yeah, Dell XPS.
Ah, are they good again now?
Yeah, this is like ranked as like top two or three laptops currently
nice.
Made.
It looks
really
nice.
Ever not good? I mean,
They went through a period of being less good than some of the alternatives.
I think some of the XPS, like the gaming ones, were these gigantic, bulky things.
Yeah,
they were. It's like a desktop.
Completely ridiculous.
Like 18 pounds.
Had a lot of students bring them into machine learning labs, and I'm just like, why is your computer this big?
Yeah.
And it has all kinds of LEDs.
Yeah.
You could program the colors of the LEDs and stuff.
Ooh.
God.
Hmm.
Not enough free space to write blah 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 bytes. Sorry. I'm writing it to my home environment, my home directory.
Can you Oh yeah, there's not much room in the home space.
Yeah. Should I write it to work? I don't even have a space on work. But
yeah, you can
do it. Right.
Oh, I can create one. Oh, yeah. I probably have to create one for you. I meant to do that earlier. Sorry.
No, that's right.
In work, yes. Mkdir, what's it again?
Like 006. Yeah. I wish it was 007.
Yeah. What?
Permission denied.
What?
Computer says no.
Oh, this happened before.
How big are these FITS images?
If you try making your own, I'm going to have to see if I can RM that. I don't think I can, actually. Oh, that worked.
Yeah.
I can delete it, but I can't change its ownership.
Right.
Try going into that, into work, and making your own self a directory.
Sure. Sure. Why not?
Yeah, looks like it. Okay. You like touch. Yeah. Good. Okay.
All right, well, I'll do that then. How do you find and replace in Vim? I'm an Emacs person.
You have to do colon S slash search string slash replace string slash G if you want it to be replaced everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think you need those quotes.
Okay.
I think you take away the extra slash as well, I'm pretty sure.
But I'm replacing a slash home.
Oh, I see.
So that's
you probably do need the quotes then. Sorry,
yeah,
my fault.
That's right.
Yeah, that's never going to work. I said quite pessimistically.
G.
I think so, yeah.
Ugh. Wah, wah.
Okay. Well, maybe I will.
It did something though, didn't it?
No.
Oh.
Is it colon S? Colon search?
Yep.
Colon S.
Yep.
No. What am I doing?
You may want to do backslash forward slash instead of quotes.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't say you'll get a poster, does it?
Yeah. Oh, it's inconsistent wording, actually, isn't it, in the email?
Yeah. I'm guessing we email back and say we'll do a poster and then submit it as well.
Maybe.
It seems like a...
Yeah, it's very awkward.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not going to do that.
Yeah, I'm tempted not to, but...
No, you should.
I should.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, I'm going to disappear here in a minute, too. Thanks, Emma. See you tomorrow. Actually, I'm just going to disconnect the meeting as well. If anybody's listening, goodbye.